And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And we've got a great show for you this week. We're going to catch up on a little bit of the news. We're going to go through the breaches of the week. And this week's deep dive is a very special interview with a man named Yossi Applebaum. You do not want to miss this. This is really, really cool because it involves Chinese hacking, supply hacking, a whole bunch of different stuff. And what this man does for a living in cybersecurity is awesome. So sit back, enjoy the time. And as always, we're going to dive right in. In privacy news, we're actually going to be talking about smart home devices like the Amazon Echo. Now, recently, an individual in New Hampshire has been charged with a double murder. And this is where this gets really interesting, because when we are looking at this, what the prosecution has done is they are looking to retrieve recordings or possible recordings from the victim's Amazon Echo, which they believe was on and recording. Now, the logic that they have is that these things are always on. They are always listening. I've actually done a live video of me trying to trigger an Amazon Echo. Its keyword is typically Alexa, and it's very hard to do. So I would say things like Integra, Allegra, you know, like all this kind of stuff to get it to fire up. And then when I said Alexa, it would fire up. Now, the message here, the meaning of that I did is that it has to understand that I said Allegra and not Alexa, or Integra and not Alexa, even though they sound similar. And as soon as I say Alexa, it fires right up. And I am sorry for all of you who are listening to this if you got one of those things around, because it's probably freaking out with everything that I just said. But the point, though, is that it has to listen to all of this. Prosecutors believe that it is recording, and Amazon, their cloud, may actually have recordings of this murder in process. Now, Amazon basically has come out and said, well, when there's a legal reason to supply information, we will absolutely do it. They're keeping it very close to the chest. And I find that very interesting, because most of us, if we had a bit of information, like let's say, you know, the murderer accidentally butt dialed us and left a voicemail, you know, of him murdering two people, we would absolutely go to the police and say, yes, you know, please. And I understand, you know, there's a lot more at stake with a massive, you know, $1 trillion corporation that, you know, wants to protect its intellectual property and how it functions. But if it comes out, this may be a bombshell for Amazon, in the sense that the court subpoenas the records. Amazon is able to supply these records. And let's say it is recording, then it's kind of definitive proof of what a lot of privacy wonks have been saying all the time, that this thing is just basically recording whenever it's on and it hears absolutely everything you do. So you're having a fight with your spouse, it's going to record it. You know, you're getting it on with your spouse, it's going to record it. It's going to keep recording. And so we'll see where this goes. But that is your privacy news of the day. And in dating news, and this is probably a new segment for the Deep Dive Radio Show, but we are going to actually be talking about dating. And the reason why we're talking about dating news is that all the major dating websites, take your pick, basically they have their big annual conference where they talk about new technologies and things that are coming up. And the big push at their conference was artificial intelligence. And so the question comes, would you allow artificial intelligence to basically match you with your perfect mate? It's going to look at you, it's going to look at your characteristics, it's going to look at, you know, your potential matches characteristics, and then it's going to put you guys together and it's going to nudge you in the direction. Now, the other interesting thing that came out with this is that the AI is designed to nudge men into basically asking out women on these sites. And what this is interesting, and there's been a lot of psychological studies that have gone on as a result of this, is that apparently, you know, we've got an entire generation of younger people, let's say in their 20s, that don't have the same socialization standards because of instant access to the internet. We can text, we can message, we can swipe right or left on a person and all of that without really having to establish an interaction for compatibility. Like, so I remember when I was dating, you know, in high school and, you know, I'd have to go over to like my girlfriend's house when I was like a junior or senior in high school and I'd meet her dad, you know, and her sister would be there and all this kind of stuff. And you'd have to run the gauntlet of interaction. You know, I had to get through, you know, her father so that we could go out, you know, that kind of thing. And that is no longer really the case here. And so those socialization skills, per a lot of psychologists, say they're really going down. Now, that doesn't bode well for the overall dating industry and their websites because, you know, they start getting outclassed. And so what are they going to do to combat that? They're going to use artificial intelligence to try to make optimal matches to improve their score, which improves their reputation, and on and on and on. But if you are on one of those sites right now and you are looking, you know, for your perfect mate, odds are there's some kind of element of artificial intelligence behind it pushing you towards specific people that are in your search results. So take that for what it's worth. And, you know, you tell me if you would let AI match you with what could potentially be your soulmate. So that is your dating news of the week. And in future technology and health news, we're going to be talking about something really interesting. Now, scientists are nanoprinting. Yes, nanoprinting what they're calling microbots. These are microscopic bots, and they are running tests on very specific things. And so basically what scientists did was they went to a slaughterhouse and got eyes, like eyeballs, from pigs, and they are taking these microbots and they will create a swarm of 10,000 of these things to have it enter the eyeball to find, let's say, an affected area like a tumor or something else, to deliver medication or excise a wound or do something like that and then exit the eye. Now, it's really interesting because, you know, as somebody who wears glasses and doesn't want to get LASIK, I don't necessarily know if I like the idea of 10,000 microscopic nanobots or microbots or whatever swarming into my eyeball to fix it. But the technology looks very promising, and it looks promising, you know, for the rest of the body as well. So, I mean, imagine if you had a tumor, you know, or cancer in like one specific area, imagine not having to be cut open or, you know, basically irradiate your body. Imagine if they could put a swarm of these microbots, you know, into your system, they would find the, let's say, the tumor, kill it, you know, do whatever they've got to do, and then exit your body. That's very promising technology. And as much as we're squeamish about eyeball stuff, that is kind of cool. And that is actually coming down the pipe, and it is in trial modes right now. I don't think they've applied human testing to this, because the only thing that I was able to find on this is that, you know, they are testing it on specific things like eyeballs from dead pigs, you know, that kind of stuff. So it is really interesting, and we're going to see where this goes. But that right now is where we're at with this. And I think that's really neat. So we'll see, and I'll keep you informed if any new advancements with that come out. You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin. And this deep dive is a little different than what my normal deep dives are, in that it's an interview. Now, before I get into that, I'm going to take you back about a month or so ago, and Bloomberg came out with an article that basically said the Chinese government had infiltrated a computer maker called Supermicro and had inserted microprocessors the size of a grain of rice into Supermicro's computers or servers, and then these computers and servers got shipped to companies like Apple, Amazon, and the U.S. Navy. They followed this up with another article basically doubling down on this, and they quoted Yossi Applebaum. He's the co-CEO of Sepio Systems, who basically confirmed this and said, yeah, we found this in a U.S. major telecom, and and on and on and on. And so the cybersecurity community has been fairly split. Now, this interview was done live, basically through video. So the audio is going to sound a little different than what you guys are used to hearing. And so I apologize for that, but it should still be clear. And also, you're going to kind of hear this intro again from that video. But please enjoy Yossi Applebaum. It's a fascinating interview. Hey guys, Nick Espinoza, your chief security fanatic here, and today I've got a very special guest. You see, I am not alone on my screen, and this is also going to be longer than my normal 2 minutes. I am here with Yossi Applebaum. Now, before we dive into who Yossi is and why he is with me, we're going to start with Bloomberg. Now, on October 4th, they released an article basically saying that the Chinese government had infiltrated a company called Supermicro to insert processors, the size of a grain of rice, into this and send these to like the government, Amazon, Apple, all of that. They followed this up on October 9th with another article basically quoting Yossi from Cepio Systems, saying that they had discovered this in a major U.S. telecom. Now, one of the things that we are not going to be discussing is all of the particulars of that. There's a ton of information out there. Everybody has said everything. You can make up your mind on that. But what we are going to be talking about today is supply chain hacking, which is what this whole Supermicro situation is and how it's affecting us on a worldwide scale. So Yossi, thank you for being here with me today.
Thank you.
Great. Now, please tell me more about Cepio Systems and what you guys do before we get going.
So Cepio is a 2.5 years old startup cybersecurity company. We are actually focused on keeping a hardware infrastructure clean as much as possible, helping our customers, which are mostly enterprises, to keep their infrastructure, their digital infrastructure, hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We have a software platform in a SaaS module that deploys into the enterprise, and we use that in order to perform that service.
So basically, your focus then primarily in the cybersecurity realm is on the hardware side. How it's
totally
secured, how it's developed, all of this kind of stuff. Now, you know, as we were talking, we're going to be discussing supply chain hacking. Do you want to let everybody know what supply chain hacking is, how that affects us?
Yeah, let's start by defining what is supply chain. So most of the people that we'll talk with will define supply chain between the manufacturing process and when the device or the box actually lands on their doorstep. Sorry, that's wrong. A supply chain starts when someone thinks way before design on an idea to develop something, and it ends when the device ends its life, when you throw it to the trash. So a supply chain includes actually the phases of design, implementation, manufacturing, subcontracting in most cases, delivery, integration, and post-integration processes, including eventually the technicians that helps to keep the devices up and running. So while looking on the entire set of supply chain, it's really hard to focus in on specific links within the chain and make sure that they are secured and think that your supply chain is secured. You need to take an holistic view on that. And eventually, we came into a conclusion that it's too complex. It's too complex, and it's almost impossible, especially for non-governmental enterprises, to put their hands on so many details that most of them are on the other side of the ocean. Our approach is different. Our approach is actually, and regardless if it's our solution or just the approach, our approach is let's face reality. Let's understand that supply chain is potentially broken, and let's deal with that by securing the enterprise against the result of such a broken supply chain.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point. Just as somebody that obviously is also in cybersecurity and
we work on a lot of different cybersecurity frameworks like NIST, which is now really pushing supply chain holistically. I think what you're saying is absolutely correct. It's not just who I'm buying stuff from and how I have access to so much as it is from start to finish, you know, and it's, I think it's one of those things that we can no longer escape. And when we're looking at these major hacks that have happened over the years, the Targets, the Home Depots, et cetera, it ends up being somewhere in their supply chain where they're getting hit and compromised, whether it's they're getting elevated access or hardware and all of that. And I'm wondering, because you're focusing purely on the hardware side, is it you specifically, or Sepio rather, going through looking at schematics? So if you're going to go into a data center and try to find something like a compromised server that's hit in some way, I mean, are you looking at original manufacturer diagrams and specs? Are they giving these to you, or are you just looking at it, you know, from a hardware data flow standpoint? Like, how does that work on your end?
So it depends who's the customer and depends what's the scope of our work. If in a specific case, for example, we work with vendors, the manufacturers themselves, or the brand names, in most cases they are not actual the manufacturers due to the globalization of that. But when we talk and work with them, in some cases we get a deeper look into the schematics, design documents, and insights inside the device. On the other side of the spectrum, we work with the end users. These don't have that kind of information. And what we try to do there is map and assess where are the pain points and maybe the potential threats. In some cases, actual attack tools. In some cases, it's just a threat that need to be deeper dived and explored.
Now, when you're saying attack tools on the user side, are you talking about infections that users are getting that are infecting hardware because you're focusing on that, like a firmware attack? Or are you talking about the standard software like crypto infections, surveillance tools, all that kind of stuff? Or is it everything? Are you just starting at the hardware level, but you're also addressing software?
So no, we don't address software. I think there are many solutions in the market to address that problem, and they are doing quite a good job in securing that. We are focused on the verge between the hardware and the firmware, which is really semantic in many cases, because if it is a programmable logic device, which is hardware component, but it runs firmware in order to perform its work, is it hardware or firmware? So we don't get into that dictionary definitions, and eventually a device is, you know, eventually it's a box, and there is electronic components inside, and we are looking on that as part of our scope. Now, we see implants or components, you know, in different ways and in different types. In most cases, by the way, we would see them outside the box for many reasons. If I'm the attacker and I want to create damage without being caught, and if I'll be caught, no one will be able to eventually link that damage to me. I should take it as far as possible from the manufacturing.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
And so we found, implants inside on cables, even under desks in some cases, or even within racks. In some cases, it's inside boxes. Yes, inside server machines, inside Ethernet switches, mouse, keyboard, and many, many other devices that actually are used in order to attack the organization through the hardware side of it.
Now let me ask you this: when you're finding these things that are integrated into the hardware, are they primarily used for like surveillance tools? Are they going to be exfiltrating data? Is it just anything and everything, that you've got going? What do you primarily see when you are looking at specific attacks? Like, if my mouse is infected, why is that important? Like, what is it doing for me? I know why it's important. I'm just, for the general audience, like, why is that? Well, what are we going to see? What is that user going to see or not see? What is it going to be doing?
Well, you know, eventually we need to go back and understand why people are attacking through outdoor. There are two main reasons. It's actually the same as in software, but in a different way. Eventually, the attacker wants to steal your information or create damage. And create damage in some cases in order to get the leverage and get some money. But the main idea is that in order to steal information, hardware is the best way to do it. In most cases, hardware attacks will not be found by any of the existing cyber tools, okay? Because whatever you can do in software in order to spy and steal information from your target, if you are the attacker, eventually you need to use the customer network in order to exfiltrate the data out. Mm-hmm. And if the customer is strictly monitors that, it's quite hard to do that, especially for a long term. If you are using an hardware implant or an hardware device in order to do that, and we'll get back to your mouse question in a second, it's much easier because the hardware has an option to have an out-of-band network interface, wireless, cellular, whatever, and right. We found many of these. So much more robust for a longer term. And even if you'll catch that eventually, you don't know what they took. You don't know for how long they've been there because your forensic tools, your monitoring tools have no clue of what happened and how and for how long. And that's another layer of threats, even after fact, after you found that attack. The mouse is actually a great example, and we use that in many, many of our discussions with customers. We found malicious mouses in different locations around the globe. Inside the mouse, someone can hide, or actually not can, someone hides a small computer that actually plays a game with your computer. So that small computer is actually looks in front of the computer as a virtual keyboard. The keyboard don't see a key, the computer, your computer don't see the keyboard as a threat. And by doing that, they can actually send commands to your machine. They actually used another path of data from the machine out towards that computer and then through a wireless interface outside their network, but they don't want to do it in public and explain how they did it. It worked out of band for a long time. In one case, for more than half a year, these criminals were stealing information from a T1 bank. And that's a concern.
Yeah, and I mean, it also begs the question of how they're physically able to get the mouse into the, you know, or whatever the hardware is. And you brought up an interesting point too, because one of the things that I do when I'm walking my clients through assessments or my potential clients is, okay, who are you catering to? Who wants to hack you? You know, are you going to be a target for groups like Anonymous? Is it going to be state-sponsored hacking because you've got intellectual property they might want? And we've run into some very interesting cases where, you know, it's just that, you know, where we have to contend with groups like Anonymous or ISIS or North Korea. You know, you never know who's going to want that information. And so you can't look at yourself as an organization and say, well, this is what we do. No, it's who you cater to. And most companies out there are, even on the large scale, are catering to even larger companies or bigger governments that they may have intimate access to. So with this, go, please.
Let me tell you something interesting. It's not always the size. You know, we have small customers and we have large customers, and small customers in some cases are under the thumb of a really large criminal organizations or even state level attackers from the other side of the world. A good example for that can be a regional bank that serves specific customers that are in interest of other country. Right. Or, and you know, I live in DC, you can imagine that many of the regional banks are here, are potentially right. under the scope of the enemies of the US.
Right, absolutely.
So it's not just size-wise. In most cases, it's really who's the customer, who's his customers, and in some cases, geolocation is a critical in part of the equation there.
Right. No, I think that's a really good point. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up too, just going back to, you know, hardware infrastructure, if they're exfiltrating data, meaning they are stealing data and moving it out through the company's own network, A lot of companies are running advanced technology at the perimeter, meaning they've got good next generation firewalls like Palo Alto Networks or Checkpoint, mm-hmm. you know, something at that level that you can do things like application whitelist and blacklist on. So you're not allowing specific traffic in and out. Now, if you've got a situation like this where you've got your mouse, and we'll just keep using that because it's such an easy example. How is an advanced detection technology, how's it going to bypass an advanced detection technology like a Palo Alto Networks firewall or something at that level?
Because they're using out-of-band connections. They are using a cellular connection or a Wi-Fi connection to an out-of-band network. And in such case, no one will pay attention to that because it's not running through the network. So gotcha. What we keep saying to our customers is, A, it can happen through out-of-band connection, and B, you won't know anything after you'll find it. And back to that story, in many cases, we actually create the bridge between these air-gapped networks, in some cases, totally air-gapped networks, and their forensic tools by actually bringing that information to the forensic. So it's really out-of-band. It really can be totally air-gapped, and still data is out. And we keep showing people, and they are amazed how much their air gap, so-called air gap network, can be easily penetrated from outside.
Yeah, I mean, and it goes beyond creating like a zero trust infrastructure. You know, not even air gapping, which means you're physically removing the computers or devices from the network, and you're still able to plug things in to exfiltrate over a cellular network. That's kind of crazy. I wanted to get your take on this. I just actually read this article yesterday. It's about basically Iran. Their nuclear program right now is it looks like it got hit with another Stuxnet type situation that is infecting and causing a whole lot of chaos on that. And the world is kind of silent right now, you know, as they're dealing with that. Do you have any thoughts on that specifically? Because Stuxnet, I've always found very, very fascinating. For those that don't know, it was a very specific and tailored virus that actually, I think it was the Israelis as well as the CIA were able to infiltrate into the Iranian nuclear program and basically wreak havoc on what's called the SCADA system that they had illegally purchased, shutting down their nuclear program. And Iran seems to be having a similar issue in the last 24 to 48 hours. And I was wondering about your take on that, just given your background and what you do on hardware and everything else.
So I spend, as you know, I spend my time in the Israeli intelligence community in the past.
Right.
And due to the fact that my chairman is the recent former director of the Mossad, and one of my advisors is the former CISO for the CIA, I would say that I hope it's true, but I really don't want to talk about
enough.
That.
Fair enough. And and we hadn't talked about that before, to be fair, you know, and everything, but it just literally just in the last 24 hours. So
fair question.
Yeah. But it just, you know, I keep up on the news, and as people who follow me know, I'm talking about these things every day. So
the only thing I would say that I wish all of us, especially in this part of the world, that news like that will eventually become true and will save lives on both sides. There's no more than a constructional damage to a program that shouldn't be running in any case, right. I guess. But no one is dying based on that, which is, I guess, good for everyone.
Right. Yeah. I would agree.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.